Greetings from Podcastville. It's Wednesday, the 20th of motherfucking November, a week away from Gobble, Gobble, Gobbleville. Fuck it. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by Hims. Listen, this holiday season is upon us, and Hims is erecting the biggest Black Friday deal of them all. You can try a free online visit to get started with Hims. 40% of men by the age of 40 struggle with not being able to get and maintain an erection. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing at all when they could turn to medicine and science? 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. They have well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you combat ED. Do me a favor. Feast your eyes on this. You can try Hims today by starting out with a free online visit. Go to 4hims, FORHIMS.com/church. 4hims.com/church. Prescription products are subject to doctor approval and require an online consultation with a physician who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details and safety information. Again, that's 4hims.com/church. The podcast is also brought to you by MyBookie. Listen, attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. Nothing in life is without risk. These days, even going to the fucking grocery store, you can take a bullet to the fucking eyeball. But during Thanksgiving week, MyBookie's offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lion game. Choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, you got some cash for the holidays. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. MyBookie will give you your money back. This is Thanksgiving with all the motherfucking gravy. So do me a favor. Log into MyBookie.ag. Make your first deposit with promo code CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar to dollar to jumpstart your bankroll, and that's on the top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat. That's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for Thanksgiving only. That's next week, a week from tomorrow. So stop waiting on the sidelines like a fucking mook. Jump on the fucking gravy train. It's the holidays. You need to make some do-re-mi, and it starts at mybookie.ag. Use code CHURCH. You play, you win, you get motherfucking paid. Kick this mule, Lee. What are you, nuts or what? Fucking fired up on a Wednesday morning. Bad motherfuckers. We got Lee Syatt, the Christ Killer. We got Adam Ray, my little brother.
Yeah, baby.
And your uncle, motherfucking Joey D, is here. Bringing it to you on a fucking Wednesday morning.
You must be crazy or half insane.
Oh,
look
shit.
At your eyeballs, street cocaine.
What's up, my brother Adam Ray?
What's up, doggy?
Always a pleasure to see you.
Oh, really? It's truly the best
looking
to see you.
Handsome as fucking ever today.
Sound like my mom.
Man,
I comb my hair.
Killer. Hey, you look good today.
Thanks,
you always
bro.
Look fucking
Thanks,
handsome.
Man.
What's happening, brother?
I'm chilling, man. Just enjoying the day. Enjoying the... I like this pre-holiday time. It feels good. It feels like everybody kind of lets their guard down a little bit. And especially in L.A. where, you know, the road rage is always at a high level. I feel like just everybody on a whole just kind of, you know, levels out a little bit.
It loosens up.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Loosens up for 6 weeks. And it's kind of...
Isn't that crazy? And then just back to the grind of the bullshit. And
then like January 16th, there's traffic, people yelling at each other,
dude,
at 405.
On the flip of a dime, people could be like, dude, yeah, go on in, dude, merge. You actually, you know what? You want to swap cars for a day, dude? I'm driving a fucking, you know, Toyota Corolla. You got a fucking Hummer. Let's swap lives for a couple. And then...
I got my wife in the trunk. You can fuck her before I drop her off on the 170, that dirty bitch.
Trunk fucking. People used to be very generous with the trunk fucking.
Yeah,
but
people just pull over. Fuck
pull
my
over.
Wife.
Fuck her real
yeah,
quick, dude.
Real quick.
High five me while you're fucking her, dude.
That. You don't have to commit it.
It's your day. Yeah. Even if you do, I'll pay for the creams.
Shit.
Come January 16th.
Can you believe it's November 19th?
It's
it was just Halloween 10 days ago. Like, that's what it felt like.
Wow, dude. When you put it in perspective like that, yeah, people were.
What about last Christmas? Like, I feel like last Christmas was like 2 months ago.
Wow. Really, what are you smoking where Christmas felt 2 months ago? Oh, I guess it did, though, huh?
It really did. This year, really.
The holidays are the benchmarks for, like, how you, it truly, right? It's kind of how we view, like, you know, how slow or fast time's moving. Do you feel like shit slows down and goes quicker as you get older? Because I've heard both sides of the point.
I think it's fucking quickened up. 1 minute I was 21, jumping up and down, eating Gorilla Biscuits. The next minute I was 37 in some bumfuck room in Craig, Colorado, getting tomatoes thrown at me. The next minute I'm in Hollywood, I'm 44 years old,
yeah.
I'm thinking about quitting cocaine. You know, the next minute you're having a kid at 50. I mean, you know, it happened like I wake up in chunks. Like if
I wake up in chunks, dude. You know, like, make that t-shirt, I'll buy that.
Wake up in chunks.
Yeah, like that's a great way to put it.
You know, it's like...
These fragmented memories. There was a guy in Vegas once, this 92-year-old guy. I was talking to him at a bar at the Tropicana, and he looks over and he goes, how old is it? Probably like 5-6 years ago. He goes, how old are you? I was like, oh, about 32. He's like, oh, I remember being 32. He's like, I was actually a pool boy here at the Tropicana, 32, what a great time. He's like, I used to just live by the seat of my pants, smoke pot, do drugs, buy meth, sell meth. He's like, I remember one time at 32, I met a couple of foreign girls at the pool, brought them up to the room, paid them to scissor each other in front of me for $30. They bought me lunch. I was like, I think you're overestimating, I'm sorry, what I'm doing at 32, but yeah. I appreciate it. There's no way, there's a similarity in the way you were living to how I'm living. But he was like, my point is, enjoy it. He goes, because I remember all that fucking watching lesbians eat each other out. Next thing you know, boom, I'm 96. And I was just like, I thought you were 92. He's like, who knows?
Sounds like you're talking to Joey, who like time traveled from the future.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he tells me to do. Like, every day, where's your bitches at? I don't have any bitches.
Oh, yeah.
Every day.
But what would you do if you...
I would do that. I would pay them to scissor each other.
Yeah, that's first and foremost, before a meal or a shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get it out of the way.
You know, it's like you think how life is so unfair sometimes.
It can be.
You know, you have all this knowledge. You get older and you start picking up this knowledge and you go, oh, I'll never fall for that trap again. You know, there's traps, stupid traps.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that you fall into a trap. I mean, like, just dumb shit.
Yeah.
You buy, what's those condos that people buy in Aruba?
Timeshares.
And then you never go down there, and then you're like, what the fuck is the wrong with me?
What I ever think I was going to go to Aruba. Yeah.
We all make those weird things. But you look back, and like, when I look at my wife, I see three different people. Like, I see a kid that was just a geek that just wanted to be accepted and did karate.
Oh, no way.
And then I see this kid that his mother died, and now he's doing drugs, and he's doing criminal shit. And then I see this kid that's doing comedy on the road and
wow, dude.
Thinking about, like, I can't wait to feature. Like, thinking about, I can't wait to feature. Like, yeah, I'm featuring for Tribble and this guy and that fucking guy, but I can't wait to be a legitimate feature at an A club.
You put that up on a pedestal. It was like, things are going to change when that happens,
and driving,
right?
Like, and not seeing anything for miles, just tumble bushes and going, you know, like, that's when I think of my life, I see like four different Joey Diaz.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the one-man show. That's how you break it up.
Yeah.
Were you a geek before karate, or did you do karate because you were like, I feel like I got too much, you know, geek vibes I'm putting out there. Karate will level me out.
I did karate because I was a geek. I got beat up.
I don't see that. Wow, really?
I got beat up and I didn't like it.
For what?
Just, I got beat up at a park and I got hit in the head with a lunchbox and I didn't like the feeling. Like, you know, my father was dead. I couldn't speak the language, and I was being raised by a mom. So when people would talk about going to a Nick game with their dads, I felt left out.
Oh, I know that feeling.
So when you have that feeling of being, you know, like an outsider type, and then getting hit with the head with the lunchbox, and it wasn't called bullying back then. It was called kids.
That's assault. By the way, getting hit in the head with a lunchbox, even if it's your favorite cartoon.
But it was what it was. In Central Park, there ain't no assault. It's either what murder happens. Or you walk out alive. You know, Central Park.
The most dangerous park in the world, huh? Yeah.
Well, at the time.
It's too big to really track all the encounters.
Right. It's too huge.
Even the birds are like, dude, I don't go in there anymore.
Part of that park ends up in Spanish Harlem. Like, there's a tail end of that park that's in Spanish Harlem. So the junkies would go in there and shoot. But this was way before. Like, when I got hit there, I just went there as a little kid. And there were kids my age.
Yeah.
They wanted to take my lunchbox, and then they hit me in the head, and I felt so insecure that I joined karate. And then the kids that were in karate with me were geeks. They went to Bruce Lee movies. Then I moved to Jersey, and I joined karate. and we were geeks. We went to Bruce Lee movies. We went to Chinatown on Saturday and looked at Chinese magazines. And
said,
someday we're going to go to Hong Kong and fight the masters. You know.
Yeah, but you know what, dude? Having that sense of community, huge. Looking back, like those guys that were in your world to kind of like, you know.
Four or five of us.
Yeah,
dude. Drugs. We're very healthy. And then when I dipped into drugs in my neighborhood, I had to live two lives. I lived the drug life with my buddies from North Bergen, and I lived the karate life with my buddies from Union City.
Jesus Christ. Now, if that was the plot of Karate Kid, I would have watched it at least 15
times.
They
didn't know that I was getting high. And
the Karate Kids didn't know?
No.
You were living separate lives.
So some Saturdays I go, I can't see you guys. I got to work at my mother's bar. Fuck you. I was going into the city with my other buddies to snort angel dust and play three card Monty and fucking, you know, go to strip clubs.
Now, did the drug buddies know that you had karate skills at your disposal?
They knew that. Yeah, because in those days you didn't have black bags or Nike bags like you have today. You rolled your gi up and you rolled your belt around the gi to control it with the cup in the middle, a towel, and a t-shirt for afterward. So you'd go to karate with your, especially once you got a purple belt or a green belt. You
want
to show people.
Of course.
You weren't just a white
belt. That's a proud color.
So you get on the bus with a bunch of green belts and brown belts and, you know. So that's another part. You know, like you look at your life and you go, like Lee, right now, even now at 31, there's the podcast, LA Lee, then there's the Emerson Lee.
Yeah.
Oh, and
that's two completely people. The guy in Emerson didn't smoke pot. The guy in Emerson didn't hear anti-Semitic slurs. The guy in Emerson
didn't have scissor dreams. You know.
No, that stayed the same. But it's
that was consistent.
It is crazy how it's just like for me, it's completely different people almost. I guess to a little bit, but do you think people change? Like on the inside, I still feel similar, but I guess I act a little bit differently. Like how similar do you think you are, or do you think you've changed three or four times?
Yeah, I think so. I think whether you can see it or not in the mirror, like just because your experiences from 5 years ago are completely different. The people in your life, even if they are the same, they're different, right? So you're always getting, you know, new perspectives and new thoughts coming at you, and that's just gonna like continue to, you know, shape and form who you are and what you think about. Like
right,
like even my. You know, sister has chilled out big time in the last 10 years. And it's like, and that's affected me because she was so fucking crazy and off the rails and had to go to a boarding school. And now she's like, I look at her as like a person with like, who has self-worth and like, you know, and actually a good parent now. And that's seeing that happen to her has made me probably, you know, subconsciously just have even more, I don't know, hope or have that bleed into this business where you might get down in certain points, but you're like, fuck man, there's always room to grow. And there's always, you know, new avenues to go down. And I mean, I don't know, dude, I don't think you ever level out as a person, you know, and that's why
I think your life beliefs is such a, stay the same.
Yep.
You know, I had beliefs and then when I got into stand up, I looked at those beliefs in a different way if I wanted to be funny, because once you become a stand-up, you have to look at your beliefs, what you actually think is sacred.
Yeah.
And you have to goof on it a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just have to goof on it a little bit, even though it's sacred to you. You know, whether it be an
abortion, the audience appreciates that, yeah.
You know, whether it be anything, you really got to attack yourself first.
Yeah.
And attack all the shit that you're going to have a hard time saying. You know, it's not hard to say what you want to say sometimes on stage if you really want to say it, you know. Last week they had a thing about some chick that was from America and she went to ISISville and blew an ISIS guy and got pregnant and now she's trying to come back. My beliefs as an American is fuck that bitch. Let her fucking rot over there. She crossed borders to go suck ISIS dick. Now she gets what she's coming to.
Was that true? That's what she went there for?
Yeah.
She boarded a plane.
They called her ISIS bride, yeah?
ISIS bride.
She had a long-distance relationship with an ISIS guy.
Went over there, fucking
went over to get some terrorist cock.
Yeah.
And got pregnant, yeah.
Got pregnant and wanted to come back with that terrorist baby?
Yes.
And I have no remorse, you know, and I said some things on there. And some fucking people hit me up and they were like, you know what, man? Some people get offended by your terms, but I don't because I know they're coming from your heart.
Yeah.
You're very anti-terrorist. Like, I think that there's people that steal and people that lie and people that have death coming to them if they get hit by a building. Nobody would care. But I don't think it's fair that Lee and his mom go to a mall on Sunday and get shot just for being there.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that. I believe people have things coming to them. There's a lot of bad people out there.
Oh, karma's real for sure. And it is a bitch, and it'll come get you.
But I don't think you should be at Walmart getting school supplies.
Fuck no.
And some 15-year-old drives 10 hours to shoot you.
Oh.
Whether it's homegrown terrorism, whatever, the ideology, all of it. You know, I was in New York in 94. I was in New York when they tried to bomb the World Trade Center. I was packing out. I was doing stand-up, and I was passing out packages for a phone company. A guy would give me $400 a week to just go into a building and pass out intro packages on Sunshine Communication.
Yeah.
Tells you what you get and stuff like that.
Right.
And I'll never forget that it was like Adam Ray was supposed to call me at 12 and never called. And all these people were supposed to call me for Coke because it was Friday. So they,
it's Friday Coke Day?
Friday was Coke Day.
So what was Wednesday?
I'd be in the city, and you would call me and go, Joey, do me a favor, pick up a gram on the way back. I'll give you $60.
Yeah.
Because I can't make it to the city, so it was Coke Day. So when I realized it was like 3 o'clock, why hasn't nobody gotten to me? And then I stopped at a store, and somebody goes, you don't know what happened. They just tried to blow up the World Trade Center, and that's the tower that controls all the communication to the pagers and shit. This is when they first tried to do it, 94, 93.
Right. In the basement.
Yeah, I remember that.
In
the basement with the truck, and they went back and asked for the deposit. And I just,
something blew up, right? There was an explosion.
There was like a partial blow up.
Yeah.
But I still remember seeing people on the A-train and seeing the looks on their faces. And like, how could something like this happen? You know, never mind 9/11. Never mind the Vegas thing. Mm-hmm. Never mind all these things. You know, you're in Vegas enjoying a country western concert, and all of a sudden you're getting shot out by a fucking window.
Yeah.
So all these acts, no matter what you call them, I have something against that. We went away from what we were talking about. But it's like, when I got off the coke, I got all these strong beliefs back about myself that I had before I started doing coke. These were the beliefs I believed when I was 13.
Oh, wow. That I went all the way back.
Yeah, like it went, like those beliefs.
Damn, dude.
Started coming out.
So coke is just blocking so much clarity,
it
blocks, huh?
So much clarity. I remembered I was a man again.
Wow.
So before we were powerful, comedian, dude. You come up to me with that stupid goof on your face, knock it off. Because before we became comedians, we're men. So knock it the fuck off. Mm. So all that came back to me. Like all that had covered up all those emotions. So I think your emotions and your beliefs stay the same.
1,000%. You know, I agree.
I goof around a lot on the shit that I have strong beliefs against because it makes me a better comic.
Yeah.
Because I have to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I tell Lee's like, I don't like eating ass. For you to become a better comic, you're going to eventually have to eat somebody's ass. Because that's part of the discipline.
Yeah.
It's doing things you hate doing.
Stepping out of your comfort zone.
Stepping out of your comfort zone.
You know, that's how you figure out who you are.
And
it's the only way to do it.
That's the only way to do it. So I don't care what you want to do. Like, what you want to do really makes no difference to me.
Yeah. What do you not want to do?
What you wanted to do has gotten you to nowhere.
Wow.
So if it's gotten you to nowhere, why are we still playing this fucking charade?
Wow, dude.
Just do what needs to be done. Do outside your... I think to become a... For me to really start hitting with comic, I had to say shit that I didn't want to say. Catholic religion? Are you kidding me? I love Catholicism.
Sure.
I was raised on that. You never blasphemed. I'm up there talking about pedophile smoke at church. You know, so I want people to understand, like, I'm a church guy. I'm a Catholic guy. I don't ever want to hear a fucking Jesus joke. But for me to become a better comic, I had to say Jesus joke. And I had to come to the conclusion that the Jews killed Jesus. You know, it wasn't
could do both.
Yeah, they didn't. The Last Supper. No, they went and hijacked that motherfucker. They knew what time it was. You want to buy all this religious shit that the light came in?
Yeah.
Taste my bread, the bread that's my body. That's not the way it was.
Yeah.
Jews didn't even let you pass the bread around. You know what I'm saying? They came in with knives
we
out.
We love carbs. What can I say?
Yeah. They came in, knives out, started stabbing motherfuckers. So all those things you have to... That was my first attack.
It's so funny that you say that even just getting like the balls to split that line and have something that means so much to you be able to poke fun at it. It's like, I just got slammed. I just did the Dolby with Dan Cook last Saturday, and in this joke about being Jewish, wanting to be in the NBA. And I just had this new tag where I make fun of how my mom said, I'd never be in the NBA, no Jews in the NBA, blah, blah, blah. And then I tag it with, I go, Jews never be in the NBA. We're done showering in groups. And then people kind of, it gets split with like a lot of O's, but a lot of laughter. And then I go, fuck you guys, it's a good joke. I go, you don't have to like it here. You can laugh on the way home if that's more your speed. And then that gets like an also another reaction. But I haven't stopped doing it. And I've got a lot of comics, friends of mine that I respect, to be like, man, it's a good tag. You know, it's a funny end to that. And, you know, shit, man, I've been to the camps, bar mitzvah, I'm Jew through and through, you know. But again, it's like at some point I had that thought for that joke.
There's
got to
be something about your religion you don't like.
Yeah.
There's got to be something.
There's a lot of stuff about it.
You know, when Sebastian first did that bit about going to a Seder.
Oh, it's true.
And how bad the food is.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, damn, this is a good joke.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it would have been a lot better joke if a Jew would have went out there yelling.
1,000%.
Fuck that food.
Yeah.
Fuck Nana. You know, whatever you guys call grandma. What do you call grandma? No, there's something.
Oh, a booby or something?
Booby. Yeah. Fuck booby.
I knew it was like, some private part.
You can't say fuck booby.
You can't say fuck booby.
No, this is what I'm saying. You have to.
You have to say
once
you have
you're
to
a
fuck booby.
You
got
to say fuck booba.
Yeah.
And fuck a fucking husband, too, with his fucking shiny
fuck
shoes.
You and your gefilte fish.
Yeah, with his Auschwitz shoes on.
His Auschwitz shoes.
For a Jew to really break through as a Jew,
yeah,
he has to go up there and do one of the weirdest things ever. And that's making Auschwitz shows, even though he had an aunt or an uncle.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you don't respect that experience and that you don't have empathy for that, you know. And that's what this woman was coming at me for on Facebook. She was like, I just think you, as a Jew, to make that joke and to comment on a situation, what? And then she was, you know, she's like, do you even know what the Holocaust is? I mean, now she's just questioning my, you know, understanding of historical events. And I'm like, yeah, I just put, thanks for coming out. Glad you enjoyed it. It wasn't worth getting into trying to break down to her that, you know, like you just said, we have to take these risks and you have to, yeah, you know, find the funny in things that shouldn't, you know, that not everyone's thinking of finding some humor in.
There was a little Jewish guy in Boulder. I forget what his name was. He came into the In-N-Out.
Ronnie Leibovitz.
No, he came into the deli.
Yeah.
The deli zone. I used to hang out at the Deli Zone.
It was called the Deli Zone?
The Deli Zone.
I love that.
It opened up at 8 and they served the mean ham and egg sandwich.
Ooh.
I forget what his name was and I'd ask him, where the fuck you been? We were worried about you. And he goes, don't worry about me. Worry about yourself. He was like an older guy. And I forget what the fuck. I just was going to tell you. One day we were just talking and I was just... He was 93. I'd been doing comedy like 2 years. I was still not doing Catholic jokes.
No way.
And no way would I do a fucking...
It wasn't even the realm of possibility for you yet, right?
Not even the possibility. And I would not even consider doing it.
You'd see people doing it and you were like, how do they do that?
Yeah.
That's not, like, I'm not going to do that.
You're going to die in hell, you dirty motherfucker.
This guy's up here fucking boobies. And
one day, two of the owners of the Deli Zone were Jewish. And the other two were like, one was... That new nationality, Albanian.
Oh, yeah.
What was Albanian? They're like Italian light. They always make pizzas and shit. One of the best Italian restaurants in Jersey. It's owned by Albanians. That's a big secret, but nobody's supposed to know.
Oh, my God.
And I'll never forget, he made a statement one day. Somebody said something. I was talking about pizza. And he goes, this place, Boulder, is terrible. You can't get pizza here. You get better pizza in Auschwitz, as far as I'm concerned. And dog, I just looked at him and my jaw dropped. Because I had never heard it before in my life.
From a Jew at a Jew deli?
I had never heard it. But the best Jew jokes I've ever heard have been from Jewish people.
Yeah, man.
Like a good, solid Jew joke. Like there was this guy up in Boston who ran the comedy club at Club 56. And one day he had me like, you know, like when people give you a joke, but you're not prepared for it?
Yeah.
You think they're telling you like a real story. One day he's like, man, I was in New York one day and these four guys were on a bench. A priest, a rabbi, and a fucking cardinal. And he's telling me the story. And I'm like, really? That's weird.
His convincing delivery. You're just like, wow, what an odd grouping.
And all of a sudden he goes, Jesus came by. I'm like, oh, yeah, now this
here's
is
the joke.
And he goes, Jesus went up to the cardinal and says, what can I do for you, my son?
And he's like, I got a sick aunt. Say a prayer for it, God, please. And he goes up to the priest. What can I do for you? And he goes, I got cancer in my foot. Healing. He looks at the rabbi. What can I do for you? And he goes, don't touch me. I'm on disability. First time I heard that joke, I thought my eyeballs were going to fly out of my fucking head. Because I grew up in New York, and Jew's on disability. Don't touch me.
Fuck.
They all tell you, don't touch me. I'm on disability. That is hilarious.
That's so funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's a common, you know, and real stereotype that Jews are a little, you know, a little paranoid, a little, not standoffish, because we're very loving and forward, personable people, but... There is like a
fucking like, Emily Kilner had a brilliant joke yesterday on Twitter.
What did he say?
He said, 34 years ago today, I was somewhere complaining about something.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I'm like, that is fucking funny. That is fucking tremendous.
Oh yeah, dude.
But it's so weird how you have to become a really good comic, you gotta do like three or four things that you don't really want to talk about. Like, I hate talking about abortion on stage. Like, when I was...
Why?
Just doesn't... I don't need to put that bend in people's hearts.
Now, do you feel that there's certain things like that that should be off limits? Or just for you personally, you're like, nothing funny in that...
Just for that me personally.
Yeah.
I think that people got Doug Stanhitis. Yeah. When Doug Stanhope got big 20 years ago, he had a great abortion bit of something from there. All these young comics showed up
gates.
With the, you know, and they all had the same line, kick the head of an aborted fetus.
Yeah.
You know,
dead
those
baby
type
jokes.
Of lines. I don't like those lines.
Yeah.
I think you're not going anywhere with those. But any subject could be made to sound brilliant. I hate when people go, well, that's a hacky subject. If it's a brilliant joke, it's a brilliant
Funny's
joke.
Funny's funny, right?
I don't give a fuck if it's hacky or not. It's a brilliant fucking joke. The guy's just dropping knowledge every day, you know?
I mean, so even just aside from comedy, like the reason why I asked the question is like, that's sort of what I'm struggling with is like, I came here and I don't know if it's my upbringing or what it is, but I'm too naive. I still trust people like, oh, let's go do this. And like the whole LA stuff, like I feel like I need to get over it and grow up a little bit, but I don't know if I'm going to be 50 years old still like, oh, I trust everybody and everyone. Like, it's just, even outside of comedy, like, even though you can change a little bit, I feel like I'm still that 8-year-old kid inside who goes to Hebrew school and fucking, likes to eat snacks and watch TV. Like, it's, I don't know, I don't know if what's deep inside of you ever changes. Like, that's what I'm worried about.
No, it changes. You mature, you look at things differently. You look at your mistakes differently.
Yeah, you'll be a different person in 10 years.
I hope so.
You know, I didn't like broccoli when I was 8, and I still don't like motherfucking broccoli, all right? I didn't like cauliflower when I was 8, and I still don't like cauliflower. You put a beet on my dish, and that red juice touches my mashed potatoes, and there's going to be
You're
going to
be on disability.
Wrestling. Yeah. You know, this
I had had yogurt since freshman. I'd never had yogurt until freshman year of college because I was so baked. And the campus store was closed. My buddy went to his dorm room and he's like, I got some yogurt. So I'm like, dude, anything. I'm fucking starving. I start chowing down on this. And he's just like, dude, you're eating that like you've never had yogurt before. And I was like, I haven't. And he was like, are you kidding me? So then he opens his second fridge. And there's like 30 flavors. I go, you got to be imagine discovering yogurt for the first time and seeing that there's fucking 90 flavors. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that... That to me was so crazy that it was such an eye-opening moment too, because I was like, man, if I haven't had yogurt until I'm 19, like what am I gonna experience or discover like in 2 years from now? You know what I'm saying? And it was, and again, I had to put myself in a position that was like leaving home to go to school and like smoking pot for the first time, and then, you know, hanging out with kids in the theater school that I didn't necessarily have a lot in common with, but pot brought us together and we had some cool conversations that brought us all back to somebody's dorm, and then we're hanging out, listening to music, whatever. There's some girls on that floor that somebody was trying to fuck, and then all of a sudden there's a fucking yogurt smorgasbord, and just, you know, I don't know what the point of that story was, but you know, new experiences.
I didn't eat sushi till I was 32.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about. 32?
32.
God damn.
And I lived in New York.
God damn.
In Seattle.
Was that an active choice? You've been around it, right? Just
been around it. I saw Desperately Seeking Susan, and the cab driver, Tony Longo, had a great line. He goes, I tried sushi once. wasn't that good till I brought it home and cooked it. And it's the dumbest line in the world, yeah. But I just always remember that. I'm like, I don't want to eat raw fish.
Yeah.
And then some girl bought a California roll one night.
Oof.
And I tasted the basic California roll, and I was like, fuck, this ain't bad.
Yeah.
And then I went in there and tried a couple things, some things I hated, and some things I fell in love with, and the rest was fucking history.
I'd never get sushi on an airplane, would you?
No.
Yeah, that seems like the gamble of all time. When I hear people being like, you know who's got terrible fucking California rolls? Delta Airlines. I'm like, the fuck are you even rolling the dice for
that? I don't even like taking sushi to go.
It doesn't last?
It doesn't hold.
It doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hold.
Something happens on that car ride.
Something in the 6 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, dude.
Sushi, so instead of fucking with it, just eat it there.
Keep it at the home base, man.
I'm not going to lie to you again. When things were rough, I'd pick up a spicy roll from Ralph's, but it had to be at 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, when they just got done cutting it, right?
As soon as the Jap put it on the fucking counter, you watch her like a hawk. I go in there and watch that bitch like a hawk. Especially Rock and Roll Ralph's, because I knew the butcher at Rock and Roll Ralph's.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know the butcher?
I used to. This is years ago.
Oh, that's exciting.
There's a black butcher that was big at Rock and Roll Ralph's.
It's awesome.
And I used to get him to cook fish for me. Like, I'd pick a fish and he'd deep fry it in the back, and I'd just take him to go back.
That's fucking incredible.
Cut little nuggets up.
You were homies with the local deli guy?
Always gotta be.
That's the dream. You gotta be. You gotta make relationships with your local vendors, you know?
If you're a fat fuck, you should know the owner of every restaurant you frequent. You should get to know him so you can take a peek in the kitchen.
That's all you
want. That's what I always do.
Yeah.
Take a peek in the kitchen. Let me see what the kitchen looks like. Make sure the people aren't picking their noses. I don't want to eat unless I know somebody at that joint, you know.
Dude,
I talk to them, I have a relationship with them, you know. It's very, my loyalty for different products is extraordinary. Like, if I find something that works for me, there's no reason to go anywhere else. Yeah, but it's better. Go talk, take your wife, take your mother, don't take me. I found utopia. You know what I'm saying?
Would you ever start a restaurant or own one or invest in one?
It would have to be the ideal location. I know exactly what I want in a restaurant.
Oh, yeah?
I know exactly what I want and what I could cover the spread for. The days of carpet joints are done. You're just going to, you can't keep up with the Joneses. It's too much to keep alive a restaurant in the daytime. It's too competitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, food and salmonella and all that risk. I would like a bar that served the late night menu.
Yeah.
Okay, if I moved to Louisville, Reno, Tahoe, or something like that, I would consider a bar, 10-seater.
Intimate.
A couple tables. I don't want it to be, you know, Brad Pitt's house. I want it to look like you could get, if you fall and slip on the floor,
that could be it.
Green could go into your blood system from the floor.
You want to hear people be like, was that cum or puke
that
I slipped on?
But I want the kitchen to be spotless.
Yeah.
No mice, no rats.
It's got to be.
And I want a place where people could go at 11:30 and get an open cheesesteak sandwich and a beer on the way home.
Damn, dude.
Something that does not even exist in Los Angeles. You know, I went the other night to Artie Morton's a month ago with my wife. And I'm like, how does this place close at 10 o'clock? If this place closed at 12:30, I know I'd be in here with Lee once a week getting an open steak sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the TNT NBA report.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's all you need. Something easy on the tube, too.
There's nothing to eat around here. There's nothing like that.
Closing at 10 in a city, in one of the biggest cities on the planet,
it never sounded right to me.
Baffling.
And then you go to New York, where you can make reservations at a restaurant at 1:30.
I know.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know, man.
What the fuck?
That's a treat, and it's how it should be everywhere. Because there's people that, you know, I don't, even in a small Midwest, you know, I'm going to Omaha in a couple weeks and I know they're big on food, and it's like, but that's not a place that's going to keep things open until 4 a.m. because they just, I don't know, maybe they assume that no one's going to want to be up that late,
that
but I'm like.
A restaurant by the hotel.
Oh, yeah?
Up the corner. Have you been to Omaha before?
Yeah, but not, this is my first time at the Funny Bone.
Okay, well, that hotel, I'm not going to say the name of it, up the corner from that, like 50 yards.
Hit it up.
Dog, they got a nice filet.
Oh.
That lays on fried gnocchi.
What?
With a crab cake on top.
You literally just named three of my favorite foods.
Oh, no, no. Fried gnocchi. I've never even known gnocchi comes from.
I just got caught in my
I had to go all the way to Omaha, Nebraska to find out that you could fry gnocchi So they fried the gnocchi. They put the sirloin on top. So the gravy, the juice from the steak goes into the fried gnocchi. Then they put a crab cake on top of that.
By the way, I just felt like I was at the restaurant and you were the waiter describing.
Stop. I wanted that both days.
If you were the person describing that potential meal to me, I'd be like, dude, let's put aside eating it. Can I go in the back and fuck that plate?
Delicious. It was delicious. I love traveling.
Oh, my dude, I'm going to get that every night.
Comedy is fucking going to an off. Like, some guy hit me up the other day, and I feel really bad for him. Like, I felt really bad for him because I knew where his heart was.
Yeah.
But he's like, man, when you come to Dallas, I know where you're going to get the best burger. I'm like, listen, when I travel, the last thing I want to eat is a burger. If you travel and get a hamburger,
yeah,
you're a stiff. You're just a fucking stiff. I don't care what they tell you about the burger. Like, if you travel and actually make a date to go for a burger, you should deserve to be smacked.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I go to travel, I want to get something from the town.
Yes.
I want to get, like, when I go to Albuquerque, what do you think I go to Albuquerque for? How many comics go to Albuquerque? Not too many of them. I do. I go down there for Winkle John to see John Jones.
Wow.
And I go down there for that fucking green chili and that Mexican stuff.
Because it's classic and specific to
when you go
them,
to Texas, the last thing I want is a fucking hamburger.
Fuck no, dude.
Unless it's like, you know, and even then I don't want the fucking hamburger. You got gumbo, you got Tex-Mex, a fucking burger. You know, I had a burger in New Jersey. And it was 27 miles outside of New York. It's called the Stage. Steakhouse.
I like that.
If you ever do New Brunswick,
yeah,
for Vinny.
I've done it, yeah.
Tell Vinny you want to go to the Stage.
The Stage?
Tell him to send over a burger from the Stage.
Oh, I love that.
It's 27 miles outside of New York, but it was still voted the number one hamburger in New York City.
Holy shit.
Like 2 years in a row. Then New Yorkers got jealous and they banned it out. But we went in there for dinner the first night.
Yeah.
And the second, the guy's like, nobody's getting a burger. And we're like, not really. And the guy's like, I don't know if you guys know, this is number one burger in New York City. We're like, what? Yeah, whatever. The next night, that's Dean. Have you seen Dean Dutton?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we fucking got the burger
fries. Came over, they were like, they want to send you over a burger on the house. I said, send it. And I made plans because of Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
You know me. I try.
I cut it in half.
Okay. I said, I'm going to make a deal with myself. You know, I don't know how many calories you burn, points you burn when you're on stage in an hour. I do know that when I get on stage, after 2 hours of comedy, I'm fucking starved.
Yeah.
I could eat a fucking bowl. That's why I bring protein bars with me for the whole time.
Good move.
Protein bars, protein shakes, you know. Sometimes I'll break for a law and order. Let's say it's a law and order where the mother paid the hospital clerk to fuck the retarded daughter. Because she was dying and she couldn't have a kid, so they wanted a kid.
Oh, you know that classic story.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
They paid.
Should have won an Emmy.
They paid the fucking the hotel nurse to fuck the daughter because she was in a coma from a car accident.
Oh, my God.
And she was on life support system, so they paid her to fuck her so they could have a grandchild.
Who writes that? You think that was based from a true story somewhere?
They are. 25 years of Law and Order is based from stories in the paper. They tell you at the end. That's why they make sure that the names and the changes.
It's all factually accurate, huh?
They take a story from the paper, from the New York headlines, like some crack mother puts a baby in the microwave oven. They'll just take that story and say she threw...
But raised a Hot Pocket.
Yeah. Put a Hot Pocket in there and put twins in there to boot. So she'd get the flavor from the hair onto the Hot Pocket. Or whatever the fuck, you know. I don't fucking
know.
Yeah,
dude.
You know? But sometimes I'll take like a bag of Doritos up and I'll eat it like 3 or 4 chips and I'll throw it away. Just to
pump you up for a minute.
But
get some flavor and some juice.
I'm fucking starving when I eat. Like, I love Tuesdays at the store because I get in that car and I zoom right over to Joe's on Hollywood Boulevard. I put the hazards on and I fly in there and I give those Mexicans a $20 bill and I go get me 2 slices of the box. Rapido. Like if ice is coming. Like, if you know ice is 2 blocks away, how fast would you give me that slice? That's how fast I want it. The guy gives me napkins. He charges me. He gives me a lemon iced tea diet. And I jump in the car, and I'm starting.
You're ready to go, yeah.
16 points, but I save him for Tuesday night.
You do, huh?
I basically
so you're fired up tonight.
Yeah, no, especially with this fucking bum leg.
Yeah.
I've been eating my wife's cooking for 4 days. Somebody stabbed me, please. My wife's a great cook, but the same cooking for 4 or 5 nights.
Oh, man.
And I can't eat breakfast no more.
Why not?
I haven't had breakfast in a week because when you take pills, you got to eat yogurt and kombucha.
Gotcha.
If not, you shit those blocks with blood on them.
Fuck.
Yeah. You know, once they give you muscle relaxers and Vicodin and...
Clogs you up, right?
Clogs you up. So you got to eat a lot of yogurt.
Eat the shit yogurt. Jamie Lee Curtis stuff, right?
Yeah. I got to eat a lot of yogurt.
Who would have thunk that Jamie Lee Curtis would be the face of shit yogurt, you know? Activa, right? Is that what you chow down on?
I don't know. She was a spokokesman. My wife gets like regular vanilla yogurt.
Regular yogurt. It's not stuff with like extra fiber.
I don't like Greek shit.
Oh, yeah?
That shit's nasty and a motherfucker. They give it to you on Delta and American. I'm going to cut that shit out and go back to Dannon. You know, and I have a feeling that that Greek
jelly with
yogurt,
the hard stance.
That owned by like a hummus company, like in behind. Because Greek hummus wasn't big. Greek yogurt wasn't big. About 3 or 4 years ago, everybody was happy with Dannon with the fruit
that's
in the bottom
right.
of the cup.
Yeah, dude. Even Yoplait was making a pretty good name for themselves.
But if you look at today's article, people are not eating yogurt that much because of dietary things are changing. I love yogurt.
Yeah.
When I go to eat and I see our boy Mark Serratella.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Serratella?
Oh, yeah.
When I go to eat, I always get the bacon, eggs, one piece of toast, and I get the yogurt bowl. It's fucking delicious. Though.
That's awesome.
And me and my wife split it just for probiotics.
Yeah.
You know, I'd split it just to clean your fucking tummy.
Yeah.
You know, you got to take care of yourself when you're an old fucking bat like me.
Would you guys do a commercial like that? Like, hi, I'm Joey Diaz, and I'm here for, like, I don't know, shit yogurt or anal pads or just something like, would you, like a commercial like that?
Depends on where I am in my life, if I need the product, but also, you know, if anal pads is truly coming with like, you know.
Like men's tampons. Like
8 figures. I mean, men's tampons? Is that a real thing?
No, I'm just trying to think of an embarrassing
part. Don't listen to him. Men's tampons. Leave me alone.
Are you trying to ask if I would take 50 mil to do a man pond commercial?
Yeah.
I would. See, that's a good invention for you, Lee. Write that down. A man tampon for gay men. Who want a dick but don't have the time. They can just pop it in their ass and leave it there. It's like Benoit balls. Remember Benoit balls in the 70s?
Yeah, dude.
You put them in your ass and then you come back that night and pull them out while you're eating a pussy.
Ooh. There you go.
Oh,
but
my God.
Isn't it for after that when you're leaking? Like,
no.
No?
That's for people who are retarded. You want to get the asshole when it's tight. So you put the Benoit balls in their ass before she goes to work and you leave a little fuse out, like a tampon. And then when she comes home from work, you tell her, abandon ship on the panties. You want to eat that monkey. You put a two-finger Louie in her pussy. You eat that little clit to death.
Oh.
And then she's huffing and puffing. You just rip that chain out. Shoot that poison arrow through my heart. You just rip it out and blood and toys fall out. It's like a fucking Mexican pinata falls out of their ass. You're eating that fucking muffler. It's tremendous. And now, for a word from our sponsor.
Yeah, baby. That was it. You could transpose that entire paragraph into some song lyrics.
Oh, my God.
The Church of What's Happening Now is sponsored by Policy Genius. You're like, Joey, what's Policy Genius? Listen, tis the season. Open enrollment is upon you. Cover your butt for 2020 now, today. Because even if you get insurance through your job, you might not be fully covered. There's always a by the way. Most people need 10 times more coverage than what they get through their job. But getting life insurance doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. That's where Policy Genius comes in. It's the same easy way to shop and compare prices for insurance online. Just go to policygenius.com and in minutes you can compare quotes from top insurers so you can get the right amount of coverage at the best and lowest possible price. And Policy Genius doesn't just make life insurance easy. They could also help you find the right home with insurance, auto insurance, and disability insurance. And once you apply, they handle all the paperwork. Listen, buying insurance is a pain in the ass. It really is. Especially disability insurance, life insurance, car insurance. This is the way to go. Head to policygenius.com today. Policygenius.com today. Get quotes and apply in minutes. You could do the whole thing on your phone right now. Policy Genius, the easiest way to buy life insurance. Get it at policygenius.com
and tell them Uncle Joey sent you. That's policygenius.com. Anyway, back to the show. So as you were saying, a couple weeks ago, you and I were at the store.
Oh, yeah.
It was a Sunday night.
Yeah.
And I don't know whose main show room. We're on. We're in the main room.
Yeah.
And I walk in, and Bill Burr's up there. His special just came out, like, on the Tuesday before.
Yeah, dude.
And he's
uproarious
just,
applause when he enters the stage.
He's just fucking leveling the room.
Yeah.
And I walk in, and I go, I didn't even say nothing. I just walk in. I walk back there. You were back there.
Yeah.
I think the pothead was back there.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Doug Benson.
Doug Benson. Yeah. A couple of us.
Saratella was there, I think.
Saratella was there. And I'm looking at you and going, do you want me to follow Bill? And you go, no. I'm supposed to be up next. I'll follow him. And I go, you sure? If you want to follow him? And you go, yeah, no, I'm following Bill. And you kind of turn your back and part of me was disappointed because I wanted to follow Bill just to see where I am.
Yeah.
But the other part of me was so fucking impressed with you. You know, I've been at the store for 22 years. And when I hear the pussy shit that goes on down there, it doesn't even go through my ear. There was a point where I used to torture people for being picky and selective.
Like, trying to massage their spots.
Yeah, massage their spots and who they're going to follow and who they're not going to follow.
Yeah.
And I gave them shit, but then after a while I stopped because I go, you're going to learn the hard way. You're going to learn when you least expect it. You come down here, you don't follow nobody. Well, one day APA is going to want to see you. CBS for a showcase. And you're going to go down there and guess who you're going to have to follow? A motherfucker like Bill Burr. And you're going to go, fuck! I should have followed him at the store on those nights when I should have followed him.
Now I'm not ready for this.
And it's so weird how I've always loved you. I think you're a sweetheart.
Yeah.
I cheer for you when I see you on different TV shows.
I appreciate you.
I don't know if it was the one about the music I saw you on with a nice sweater and your hair was done to the side.
Oh, what was that? Ballers, maybe? No.
Yeah, it was Ballers. Yeah. Okay, it was good. Ballers. Yeah. You were playing golf?
Yeah. We were like, you know, super white, Trump preppy dudes giving J.D. Washington some shit.
And I always dug you and I always knew you were a hard worker. But once you said that to me that night, I knew you were one of us. I knew that you accepted your fate.
Oh, man.
You're like a Marine. If you get shot, you're okay. They'll give your mom a flag. Who gives a fuck?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But it just takes a weird... I could tell you thousands of stories at the store of people calling up and complaining. And people who just stop showing down there. Because they had to follow a particular person. That you just failed. You fail on your own.
Giving up if you're doing that,
You gave up before you even fucking started.
Fuck.
I never understood what the mentality was behind that.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I love you for even acknowledging that because it's like, you know, I'll be honest, I'm back there and it's like, you know, Burr's ripping the room. And you know, I'd followed you a bunch in the OR, which, to be honest, like, that's one of those spots too. I've never viewed massaging spots as even an option. And I think I saw people doing it early on and I was so turned off by it. I was like, oh, why would you want to?
Can I go up before you? I have a spot, and
I'd see people do that and then still be at the bar.
Still be at the bar.
Or they'd be like, I got an early flight and then they're hanging out and I'm like, oh, dude, true colors.
And you're like, do I smack this guy?
Yeah.
Do I go up to him and embarrass him about the other guy?
You just go, hey, he's getting it. He'll get his.
Okay, I'll see. And you know what? I know two or three guys. I used to see them do that a lot in bar shows.
Oh.
And today, they're dying.
Stand-up is one of the most just professions where it's like, man, the ball don't lie. You know what I'm saying? And if you start trying to, you know, mix and maneuver and just like adjust things the way that if you're worrying about things other than ripping it on stage and doing your job and trying to get the most out of that for you, if your head's in other spaces, at least that's for me what I figured out. I was like, if I'm going to be concerned with where I'm up in the lineup, then I've already lost for the night as far as whatever I'm going to do on stage because I've already kind of put these blocks and barriers up of like, oh, I can only do well if I'm there or I can't do the things I want to do because of this and that, which is so fucking insane to even actively do that to yourself. And so being at the main room, also it's like the store has become this, you know, real, especially now, you know, when I was working the phones there around 2013, I think, and 2010 actually, and you know, it was, it's obviously a different energy now.
It's a different
energy. And so you want to be a part of that even more, and you want to be in the thick of it. And being in the main room, man, was packed like that. And the idea of being sandwiched in between you and Burr was like, you know, just something. I was like an outer body experience for a moment. Because, look, you know, the lineups you, so, you know, I'll do the 9 p.m. a lot in the OR, and then or 11:15, 11:30. And in the main room, sometimes it just shakes up how it shakes up. And there are times when you're on a certain spot or and Burr or somebody will come in. And guess what? If you had said, too, like, I got to get out of here, or I got a spot in the OR, do you mind if I go next? Yeah, like, I'm so easy with that, too. Again, because I'm not trying to go, I have no ego about it, where it's like, yeah, I'll go after you. And then after, because I've also, again, heard the people that go, well, I don't want to, the room will be dead. They say, you know, they'll be tired of laughing. Burr, then Joey, and then I'm going to go up. Like, so that doesn't even cross my mind. But I love you. So if you were like, dude, I got to get out of here, or my leg's hurting, can I do this? And then bounce, I would be like, fuck yeah, dude. Because, you know, so those types of case-by-case things should always be, you know, present in your mind. But yeah, man, the challenge of it, of like following that and then bringing you up, and dude, it made me want to, like, you know, you want to always.
You did great. I was watching you. Yeah, I was out there.
I mean, dude,
you were confident.
Yeah.
You weren't like rattled. Because that's what most Americans, what most humans, what am I blaming this on Americans for?
Yeah.
We lose in our mind before we get there. And for years, I lost in my mind before I get there.
Yeah.
I could tell you guys thousands. We could sit here till tomorrow on how many things I didn't do because of my fear. Honest engine.
Damn, for real? Yeah.
I remember going to a comedy contest one time. Before any of us started, I'm the old man in the room. The big contest was HBO came to the town.
Okay.
And let's say Lee lived in Boston and you lived in Milwaukee. HBO showcased everybody, then they narrowed it down to three, then
yeah.
They came back and they had a big contest.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you were really lucky, they narrowed it down into regionals. And then you went to nationals. So the big ones were Johnny Walker. I don't know if you know this. If you go into old archives, Johnny Walker Booze was huge into comedy.
Yeah.
In the 80s, early 90s. If you won Johnny Walker, it was Johnny Walker, HBO, and San Francisco Comedy Competition.
I know about that one, yeah.
So you had to do something in those three.
To make a name, huh?
To make a name.
Yeah.
To get the ball going.
Yeah.
Johnny Walker was like guaranteed 20 weeks from the Improv.
God damn.
You know, $50,000 cash, and you got to do a spot in front of Mitzi on a Sunday night.
Like, I'll take
that
it,
was,
right?
That was, you know, like, that was, but I, you know how many of those contests I went to and just looked around and I got intimidated by t-shirts? Like, guys, wow. I would have, like, Minneapolis Comedy Zone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a guy that had an NBC shirt, and I'm like, fuck this. And I just ran out of there.
No way.
Get an NBC jacket, and I just left because I thought I didn't have a chance.
Isn't that so crazy?
So, but I'm not the only person who's done this.
Yep.
I know from experience of living in L.A., people who have just not come back to the store because it wasn't, you know, listen, the Laugh Factory isn't for everybody. The Improv on Melrose isn't for everybody. And the Comedy Store isn't for everybody. Yeah. I like all three of them.
Me too.
But I've had people come up to me and go, dog, I can't step foot in the store. Why? It's too dark. Mm. It's too this.
Now they're creating excuses for themselves because the fear is too.
Hey, listen,
no, you don't think?
In my mind, there's a lot of clubs I don't like. Now, if they're paying the VIG, I like them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if you want to pay the freight, right, we'll make an exception. But if you're not going to pay the freight, there's just clubs that just don't like something about it.
Of course.
There's got to be three clubs right now in your arsenal. How long have you been doing comedy for?
13 years.
13 years. Yeah. There's three clubs that from the minute you walk in, you feel creepy. And every time you walk in there, you go, this is my last time in this motherfucker.
Tell you.
But then they call you with a bigger offer, and you're like, God damn it. Mother was fucked. You're like, I don't want to go there. Yeah. I want to go to Penguins. And they're like, well, Penguins ain't going to pay you this money. You're like, motherfucker. You know, there's so many fucking places that you don't like. And I get that. I think that since I've been at the store for the last 16 months, I've changed completely as a comic. Because I was shopping around town too much. and I was getting whatever, just disenchanted at other comedy clubs. I feel now that for me to improve and grow, I just got to go to the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
There's no better place than me following Adam Ray one night. You know, fucking Brad ain't no party to fucking follow either.
Dude, that's
Bobby Lee's no fucking party.
Dude, yeah, man.
Rogan's no party. Ron White's no party. You know, forget Chris D'Elia.
Yeah.
If he gets him jumping up and down, you got a long 15 minutes ahead of you.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a 70% average of hot chicks in the audience and Chris D'Elia goes up, you might as well fucking shoot yourself right in that back chair because you ain't getting nowhere. Oh, yeah, you know,
you got to make time for them to put their pants
Bill
back
Burr,
on.
You're not getting nowhere. So what you do is you go up there, you watch them. Do not go up there. Like, it took me a year to learn how to follow heavy acts. Like, if you go up
What'd you do? What was your process?
My process at first was to go up there and focus too much on Lee Syatt. Let's keep it going for Lee Syatt. He did a great job tonight. He's a real fucking pro.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we are, and I'm not a pro. Fuck Lee Syatt. You walk in there and say, keep it going for Lee, and you fly into Lee's energy. So those last three or four jokes Lee said while you're sitting in the back of Mitzi's chair, you're picking up his word.
Yeah.
His whatever. Because you're going to go up there and flip right into his energy. So when he walks off stage, he's going to leave that costume. And you're going to walk into that costume. Have you ever seen like a play? Like
Broadway play? Yeah.
How they walk off. There's five people holding something and they just zip you up. It's like being in the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah.
A pit stop.
Oh, yeah.
You up. It's the same thing. You've got 20 seconds to get into Lee's costume. Do his tenacity. Don't put him down. Don't go, let's keep it going for chubby motherfucker.
Oh, dude.
You just lost. They loved him. Why would you put
him
down?
Why would you do that, dude?
Why? And I've seen it a thousand times.
Oh, God, I know.
Let's keep it going for the Mexican.
Opposite.
Well, they love that Mexican.
God, yeah. What are you
doing? And you're saying keep it going for the Mexican.
You have to suck his dick, but celebrate him for a minute.
You better. And I used to celebrate them. Like, let's keep it going for Paul Mooney.
Yeah.
You know, for Richard Pryor. Huh? No, I'm foaming at the mouth. I'm giving them their resume.
Yeah.
I'm putting myself down.
And then they're like, who's this guy?
Yeah, who the fuck are you? Forget.
He's fanning out over it.
I'm not being disrespectful to Lee. I'm just saying, you saw Lee, he killed. Fuck him. He's done. He's on his way up Laurel Canyon.
I honestly think that's the only way to do it.
That's how to do it.
Is to ride the wave, you know?
Ride
and that's exactly what I thought that night. Dude, Bird gave me a pretty nice intro because I even said, he goes, what do you want me to say about you? And I go, And I never even thought, you know, Burr was, and you know, we've been homies for a few years now. So I was like, and I started to kind of think, and I paused, and then he just goes, you know what? Nah, fuck it. And at first I go, hey, whatever you want. And then he goes, really? And I go, nah, actually, you know what? He goes, no, fuck it. I got it. Whatever I want. He goes, I got it. And I'm like, oh, great. Now what is he going to fucking do? But he's just such a sweetheart, such a pro. Gives me a nice intro. I was on a show with a mutual friend of ours from New Kids on the Block, this guy Joey McIntyre, and he loved that show. So he gave me a glowing thing about it. He's like, I fucking love this show. He was on with my buddy Joey Mack, one of the New Kids. He's fucking, hey, it's great. He's fucking got a podcast with the little fella. And then he just goes, you know, and he goes, give it up. Gives me a, you know, so now I'm going out there with a true opportunity to win, you know what I'm saying? And again, I stepped out and he fucking murdered. And I know you're coming up behind me, dude. So it's like, in my head, I'm like, I got excited for the crowd. I was like, dude, if I just ride this wave, I always got energy. So I know I'm always just going to take it up a notch. And then, so it was I got excited the idea of it going, you know, Burr, and then I ride that wave into you. And then you just fucking blow the roof off, dude. And that's what happened. But having any thought different than, you know, and it's, again, I didn't fucking overly praise Burr, you know, I was just like, what do you got to say?
Bill
Keep
Burr.
It going, man.
Bad motherfucker.
And everybody's like, holy shit. Said something else. And then I got right
into it. Right into them. What's up, you savages?
Yeah, dude.
That's
right
it.
Into
Burr's
it.
Burr's gone. You just switched the channel.
So he's off the stage,
but if you keep him there like a memorial, if you keep him there,
yeah,
keep talking about him, you're not going
to People are thinking about him. Where is he? Looking for him? What side did he walk out of? Maybe I can go say hi to him. No, man.
I would go up, give him praise, and then go, Burt said something really funny. Bill said something really funny.
Yeah.
What the fuck are
am
you
I
talking
doing?
About?
What are you rehashing his shit for?
What are you rehashing
Time
shit
to move
for?
Forward, man.
So it was just so much. I called Rogan the next day. I saw something fucking crazy last night. Fucking, I went up to Adam Ray, asked him if I could follow Bill. He's like, no, I'm next. And he's like, he's the real deal. I go, I know.
Joe said that?
Yeah, because We live for that shit. That's that. What
yeah.
being a comic, that's what being a human being is
about. Yeah.
Is eliminating all the fear from your life to get the most potential from your life.
Yeah.
The more fear you hide, you know, and listen, and don't, oh, well, Joey just said, you know, I got fear of fucking Hindu food.
You know, it's a real fear.
Serve you food real with fear. Fucking sandals on.
Yeah.
Hindu, I don't like Thai food, you know. But those insecurities are not teaching me something. Like, I really don't want to travel abroad. Like, I'm just scared.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if I'm scared. I don't want to do it. Should I get my visa? I know I'm going to learn a fountain of information.
Yeah.
By going abroad.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're scared of sometimes, that we might learn something, that something good might happen. You know, it took me 14 months to get on stage the first time.
Mm.
Why do you think? Because I was scared.
Too long.
I put people in the trunk of a car. I break into places. I stole jewelry stores. I do shit that nobody, you know. I used to pickpocket people at supermarkets.
What?
People looking at deodorant and leave their purse open. I just walk by when the Friday when you get paid. They put
Please
that.
Tell me you made that face too when you did it.
Oh, yeah. I just take it to go.
Take it to go.
So I did all these things, but I'm scared to go up on a stage and do 3 minutes, something I've been doing all my life except without the stage. We've been being social all our lives.
Well, that's what's crazy about stand-up, dude, that you truly, I mean, pickpocketing, rob, whatever, but there's still, what is it about getting up there by yourself and having all these people? That's why so there's a select few that do it and really end up standing out through the test of time, because a majority, what percentage of the world do you think just could not even fathom? I mean, dude, there are people that I respect on a huge level that aren't in the comedy world, right? That have other avenues that they've, you know, really, you know, achieved a lot of greatness in. And they look at, and they talk to me with this like deity type, you know, amazement of like, I don't know. And I'm like, what do you mean me? Like I'm talking like athletes and other people.
Like,
and I'm
just, you're like, a surgeon.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a surgeon. I've had surgeons come up to me and go, I don't know how you get up on stage every night. That was shit. Your shit.
You put a heart back together.
Yeah. What about when I'm cutting you with a scissor? I got to make sure it ain't the wrong fucking sheet. You know. I mean.
I got to make sure I'm using a knife, not a spoon. To
it's
put
funny.
Your...
Mercy, my daughter had an assembly yesterday. And at dinner, we were talking Friday. And she goes, you know, Dad, I've done it with other people on stage.
But yeah.
This time I have to say it by myself. And I tried to explain to her that next to death, the second biggest fear is public speaking. They did a survey years ago and they asked people what their biggest fear is.
Yeah.
Death. And what's your second biggest fear? Public speaking.
Oof.
Some people cannot even think about it.
Can you even think of a time when you were, though, like that, where you would put those two in the same boat, where you would go death, public speaking? Or were you, was it always, like, was there a point where you ever were like, I can't imagine being on a stage talking in front of people?
Me?
Yeah. Or was it always something like, oh, I could do that, I could do, but I just don't have...
Anthony Robbins.
Yeah.
With the earplug and him doing his thing.
His headset and all that.
In 86. And he would walk through the aisles. Like, he just doesn't stand up there. He'll talk for a while.
Oh, he wants to be a part of the people, right?
And he walks through the aisles.
Yeah.
And he'll go, you up there. And he'll roll his sheets up. And he'll roll his sleeves up.
Right. Rub your shoulders.
Take his jacket off.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty amazing. I didn't know how he could do that. I didn't make a mental note whether I could do that or not at the time. I just knew that that was pretty fucking amazing. I always appreciated people who could just... I don't know. I can't tell you that I wasn't or was going to do it.
Gotcha.
I didn't have an opinion for it at all.
Gotcha.
But I felt comfortable talking around. And then when we did like book reports.
Yeah.
You got to go up in front of the class.
Yeah.
And I remember kids crying. And I remember going, I don't know what you're crying about.
This
is easy. Just go up there and read the fucking sheet and sit at your desk.
Yeah.
And then in the sixth grade,
no one's expecting you to connect or make a fucking jaw-dropping performance.
Yeah. So I think I got over it early, like the stand, you know, and then people tell you you're funny,
yeah.
And you get the stand-up, and you're like, then the first time you get up to stand-up, you go up there and realize that what you've been doing all those years isn't stand-up.
Uh-uh.
Like, you thought it was stand-up.
Like, I had three kids laughing at fucking kickball at recess. I thought I could take that energy and...
The worst is when you invite your employees.
Oh, yeah.
The people you work with to come to one of your second or third performances. And you're like, I can't wait. He's so funny at work. And they're all just sitting there waiting to laugh when you're at the Comedy Works finally and there's no laughs.
No, no.
And then afterward, they're like, he was so good. And you're like, oh.
And they're always, they always, dude, I've seen it at like a belly room shows where there's a guy comes, brings 40 employees. And he also is so out of his element and so overly ambitious. And they're so excited and supportive. But you're, you know, you get a little blue right off the bat because he thinks like that's what's funny. So he's up there talking about like, man, and, you know, work's tough and it's tough working across from somebody like Karen. And everyone's like, yeah, Karen. He called her out. And he's like, because all I can think about is, boy, what does that pussy taste like? And everyone's like, hey, what? Like, is that the joke? Like, he just, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then he's breaking the wall a little bit too much because he thinks like, oh, this is comedy because it's what he sees and he hasn't done it enough to really, you know, have a point of view. He's just like, this sounds funny.
That's
and
the worst.
Oh, man. It's the worst and the best.
Those are the worst days of my life.
Oh, yeah. I think what you were saying too about getting like, you know, even you telling me that you told that to Rogan is really cool because, you know, you want the respect and the on some level of your peers, right? And to even get to a point to where I could be at the store and be a regular and be on a show like that and have an opportunity to be in a place where I'm between two fucking beasts like that, two true true legends of the game, people that are just that people look up to like that on a large scale. Like you gotta, you know, there was no doubt in my mind that to not, you know, and I could almost feel I had to kind of gauge you. I was like, is he trying to fucking test me right now? Or is he, I was like, cause I know what I'm going to do. My answer is, but it's also, I had to take a beat once I was walking out and you, cause you said to me after you, like, I was making sure he's like, cause if you were going to let me go and you didn't want to seize this moment, you're like, I was going to go tell the little guy to find another tall person to do the podcast with,
how
you know?
Funny, yeah. It pisses me off.
But
it
hearing,
just shows me who you are.
Yeah, dude.
It just, you just cut through everything I had. I can't respect you as a comic.
And getting that respect is what you want. And I do want to say this too, because it's like, you know, hearing that about Joe, you know, there's certain people too, that you get in this business where you, you know, that you put up on these pedestals, right? And having like the store where it's a very, there's a good sense of community. Like there's the fun and the, you know, the pressure of some of these rooms and wanting to crush. And I hear comics all the time saying like, dude, I can't even do new material in the OR now because it's packed and it's always, you know, I'm following this, I'm following that. So I feel like I just got to crush. I can't do my shit. So there's different energies changing every night, but I was in the OR one night, and this is to my point about appreciating that you even told that to Rogan, because, you know, I think we'd been on shows. I'd brought him up a few times in the main room, but, you know, everyone's doing their thing, not paying attention all the time to what's happening prior to them being on stage. And I'm in the OR, and Jeff Scott and I, every time I'm up, we'll sometimes do a little, you know, because I got a big musical theater background. I used to bring my buddy Avery Pearson on the road with me, and he'd come on stage with his keyboard. And after an hour 20 of stand-up, we do about 20, 30 of improvised musical crowd work. So any crowd work I've done in the show, we now do improvising songs off the crowd. And, you know, I've been singing my whole life. He sings too. Joe, it fucking blows the roof off. And it's something different. And it's, you know, as a white dude, it's separates me a little bit to be like, oh, there's another kind of skill set that he's bringing to the table that's not just jokes and a sea of white dudes that are doing clubs around the country. And so anyway, Rogan's back there with Eric Griffin. And I, you know, I don't know if he'd seen me really on stage yet. I know he'd heard, you know, whatever when I bring him up on stage in the main room. And he's back there, and I'm messing around with Jeff a little bit, and it's a small crowd, and it's fun or whatever. And then I get off, and I see him and Eric talking in the back, and my first thought is, and I see him kind of like talking to Eric, and I was like, my first thought was kind of insecure about like, oh, I bet he's wasn't a fan of the musical stuff that we were doing, right? It was a little different. And then it gets up and kind of walks by me, and I go to Eric. I go, oh, man, was Joe, was he like not speaking highly of that? He's like, and Eric's like, oh, what do you want me to say, man? You know, like, what do you want me to say? And I was like, oh, he was, huh? And he's like, yeah, he's like, he was, you know, just kind of, you know, taking a couple jabs at whatever that was, and not in a, you know, malicious way, but way that you kind of, you know, do with your buddies. And again, we chummy enough at that point, so I didn't really take it for too much to stop doing it. Like, but there was a piece of me too that was like, and it was a real good learning moment, because it was like, it got like, you know, it ate at me for a minute, because I was like, God, man, here's this guy that, like, you know, I ain't looking to be best friends with. But you get to a point when you're around in the store or any club so much where you get to be on a peer level with someone that you want to, like, have that evolve and grow. And you want to hope that there's another instance where I'll be at a bar and we'll have a chat that'll go 30, 40 minutes, and we'll learn more about each other, and you just, you know, get to pick somebody's brain about comedy or whatever. And in that moment, I was like, oh man, is that like, I started getting real insecure about is, does he now think I'm that comic? Because I know I was like, he hasn't seen me on stage. Now he maybe thinks I'm just some guy that fucks around and does musical shit in the OR in front of 50 people. So anyway, to circle that all back around, the fact that you told that to Joe and he was pumped about it. That means something to me, man. So I appreciate it.
If I find out somebody says something about me and they won't follow me, I'll tell Joe. And me and him laugh our asses off.
Hell yeah.
And then we figure out a torture for this person.
Oh, for real.
We can sandwich him certain nights. There's a dude at the store that won't come down there on Tuesdays no more.
Why not?
Because I'm down there. And when I'm down there, he gets, like, if I have a 10:30 and he has to go up behind me, he's down there at 8:15 because he's waiting for me to miss that by 1 minute. And he actually complained about me. There's been a couple dudes.
Oh, shit.
That have complained about me. And I laugh at them and I feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
That you would let a fat felon old man get in your comedy career. Like, you would let me stand in your way where I would keep following me and figure out how to follow me. And I know it's like that night. If I would have followed Bert and I would have ate a bag of dick, I would have gone home. I would have analyzed it honestly. Yeah. Why I sucked a dick after Bill Burr. Was he that powerful? Nobody's that powerful. It just wasn't that I wasn't that prepared.
Mm.
So that's how you learn to follow people. That's why I always really liked the store.
Yeah.
Because it teaches you how to follow an array of people. But if Mitzi Shore found out through the grapevine.
Oh, yeah.
That Adam Ray had a hard time following Joey, and he's vocalized it a few times, and it got back to her, you're dead.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, she would make you drive to La Jolla and follow me after I headline, like, just for principle. Just
are you down, fucking kidding me? God, I love that, dude.
Go down there after, and you're like, I don't want to drive down there to follow Joey. Like, it's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that's what she did.
To help you, huh?
I went up to her like the first week and I'm like, do me a favor. I want my career to last year. I want to keep doing spots. Don't put me in the main room no more. And she's like, why not? I go, that was the worst experience of my life. Big mistake. She put me in the main room every Saturday at 1:45. Mm. That's the spot to hate.
Oh, yeah.
It's a $300 spot.
Yeah.
When you're broke.
Yeah.
$300. Ooh.
Oh, it's a lot of sandwiches.
Well, let me tell you something. When you get off the stage, you're like, I could have sucked three dicks or done that spot. Because if I would have got 100 for each dick,
I was just going to say, how do you know what you're getting?
I closed my eyes and just sucked it. It would have been better than doing that spot because I just died. Like, quarter to two spot, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Especially if you have to follow a Holtzman, especially if there's four people left.
Oh, yeah, dude.
So all these things, when you go home after those situations, you tell yourself, this isn't working.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to start roller skating again or skateboarding.
Yeah.
But little do you know that those situations are
building
you very strong.
Yep.
And they may not be, every night when you go on stage, listen, whether you're a plumber, electrician, a carpenter, every time you go to work, you get something from it.
Hmm.
Like for us as comics, we either get something ego boosting, a new joke. There's always something. There's always a result to a set. Always.
Even if you're not purposefully trying to do a new bit to get something out of it.
Like, you grow. You grow.
Yeah, just from that rep.
And it's on the nights that you don't think you're going to grow when you grow. Nights that you're like, fuck, I should cancel.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go down there and you have to follow somebody and the joke you were going to write, you changed it before you went up and it worked.
Huh.
You know, there's many little fucking things you could take out of a set. It's not just win or lose. It's not like me entering a swim race where I take first, second, and third, and I lose. With comedy, you might lose by not having a great set.
Yeah.
But you learn something.
Well, here's another great example of that. The main room, that was where I showcased the one time for Mitzi, right? And all, her only feedback, by the way, was, why do you wear a hat? Because I had a backwards hat on. I was like, what about the material? She was like, I just saw the hat. And that's, I was like, fuck. But it was such a like cutthroat thing to say. And I was on this Bringer show, right? And back then, you know, you do 3 minutes for your showcase. This was, what, 2011? And she was still coming around, but, you know, less and less. But she was there in the main room watching with Tommy. And the runner of the Bringer show, I was supposed to go, I was supposed to be a host, then one of the Bringers, and then comic that was going to showcase. And instead, this guy who was running the Bringer show said I had good energy, and he goes, you're just going to do a, you're going to cold open. I'm going to put you up top for your thing. And I was like, and I started getting in my head, and we're talking about massaging spots. I was like, dude, this is not setting me up to win at all. This is my showcase. Like, I know I'm supposed to be later on, 3 minutes up top where the drinks are coming in. And he's, and he made this whole point though of, he's like, hey, if you're ready, you're ready. And you can go out cold with 3 minutes. And part of me was like, yeah, I think there's some truth to that. But also like,
fuck you.
Fuck you. Like, this is not where the, I'm supposed to be in the showcase. It's 3 minutes. I'm going out cold. Like, this is, but Mitzi's back there waiting. And so I go out and drinks are coming. And you know, when you're also going out first, you feel responsibility to play a little bit of host and welcome everybody in. But I got 3 minutes. I got no time for chit chat and how you doing? And you guys excited for the show? Whatever. So I just get up and launch into material, which nobody was really ready for. And it did not go well. And I was in my head. And I started making excuses right after of, oh, I was my position. It was this and that. And then Mitzi being like, why I didn't like your hat. And I'm just like, dude, nothing about my fucking jokes or performance was critiqued that night. And it took me, man, a good probably close to a year to like just look deep inside myself and go, dude, if you were fucking ready and poised and just like how we just talked about, which is fucking crazy, what, 7, 8, 9 years full circle, get another main room, experience moment to go, you know, are you going to make excuses? Or are you just going to like jump on the wagon and take advantage of what's right in front of you? And it's like, you know, I thought for so long, I was like, dude, it was because I didn't get past then because I had to go first. And it's like, nah, man, if you had your shit together, you would have gone out and done your thing. And Mitzi would have been like, I hope you only wear a hat. You know,
she
like,
wouldn't have worried about the hat.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have worried about the hat. It's funny, Kyle. I think she said things to you also to fuck with you. Looking back at it now.
Oh, for sure, right?
Yeah. To make you go home and go, fucking hat. What the fuck?
Yeah, how should that matter? But
I worked 12 months on that joke about
farting in a cup.
Black guy falling down the stairs. Yeah. And now I got to fucking worry about that.
Yeah.
It's such a long... Life is such a great journey. You know, why fucking live it half-cocked and half-scared of shit?
Wow, yeah, life? Dude.
And that was me till I was like 20-something. I was just half scared. Don't get me wrong. I'm kidnapping people, robbing apartments, and robbing coke.
Do you have a best kidnapping, like, out of all the kidnaps?
No, I only had one kidnap.
Okay, great. You tapped out after that.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good one.
But you don't really know it's kidnapping until you do it, because kidnapping isn't really me calling Adam Ray's father and saying, I need $250,000. Kidnapping is me taking you from one room to another without your consent. So if I put a gun to you and go, let's go in the bedroom, let's go see that safe and how much your money you got in there. That's kidnapping.
Yeah.
That's against your fucking will.
Wow.
But if I'm talking about like all the criminal creepy shit I did, like I didn't have fear to do that, but my biggest fear was getting on stage. And I had 1,000 of those fears growing up.
Man.
You know, like little things that could have catapulted you.
Yeah.
Not just stage, little things. Auditions that you might not go for.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go to the audition. What are you scared of?
Not getting it.
Not getting it. Or getting it and blowing the fuck up.
Oh, shit, yeah.
What are you fucking scared of? Both ways. You only got two things that could happen. Blowing the fuck up or them saying no. And then you try back again. You know,
do you think there's a time that human beings just on a whole like get comfy with facing any of those fears? Like, do you think somebody at 20 who maybe didn't have the experience you did, you think they're faking it if they're like, I'm ready to go, I want to... Or do you think some people truly are born and have this level of I don't know, confidence and just a sense of, yeah, I'm gonna make the best with whatever happens. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, some of us are born with more talent than others, but we could all work to get that talent equal to one another.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes work, you know. Obviously, all three of us had a comedy bug. Now we have to work it and to mold it into like a sculpture, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You have to work it to find out it's you. What was the question?
that was the answer.
That was the answer.
That was the answer.
I didn't know.
Well, I was just curious if you think like people, you can, if there are even at that young age, because you said it, what, 27 is when your fears, right? Is that what you said? Kind of went away?
Well, I was just, like, it took me so long to get on stage. Like, nothing bothers me more when somebody comes up to me and says, hey, I'm moving to L.A. in 14 months. Mm. And you're like, what's going to happen in 14 months? Well, I got a new job and I'm going to pull away $800 a month. You're dead. You're dead. You're not going to come out. You're not going to put out $800 a month. Because if you know anything about life, shit happens. I just ripped my fucking hamstring. Shit happens on a daily.
Yeah.
So for you to tell me you're going to put $800 a month away and move out in 14 months, nothing bothers me more than that. Ever since I got into comedy, like I started comedy, my thing is go. Like if you come to me and go, Joey, I'm thinking of starting comedy, I'm the type of motherfucker that'll drive you to your first open mic just for you to get it over with.
Wow.
Because if I got to hear you tell me 10 times how you're getting material ready.
Oh, God, yeah.
Getting that's ready to go up. Don't worry, bro.
Yeah.
I'm getting it ready.
Man, 3 months, me, man.
You know how long I had that excuse for?
Yeah.
I used that excuse. I'm getting my material ready.
I got a killer 7 minutes it's like ready.
It's like when you walk into that gym. And you go, how much is it to join the gym? And they're like, $80. And you're like, that's cheap. But you see people like sweating blood and people crawling. You're like, I'll be back next week. And then every time you walk down that block to get a slice, the owner comes out. Every time he's like, hey, when are you coming? Next week.
Yeah.
And then you run away. Like,
yeah.
Next week.
Yeah,
next
yeah.
week. That was me.
Yeah.
Next week. That's the same thing to a comic. When people hit me up, I get hit up once a week. Hey, man. I'm getting material ready. I'm thinking of going on stage.
I'm going to feature for you in 5 years, man.
Yeah, I'm going to feature for you in 5 years. I don't want you to think about it. Your first time on stage, you're going on stage to die. You're just going on stage to get your feet wet.
I know.
And get that rush.
It's so tough to hear.
I want you to get that rush.
Yeah.
And then come back to me. Then we got something to talk about. But if you're going to come up to me and say, I'm getting on stage in a year.
Oh, man.
What kind of material should I write?
You got to get a little taste of it first before you start planning the
future.
It
doesn't matter what material you should write because you're not going to remember it the first time you go up there and 80 eyeballs are looking at you and there's nothing but lights. And you could see the people all the way in the back. Like, you could be fucking blind. And when you go up on stage, you could see that one head that's popping through the back, that one guy that's trying to look at you like, this motherfucker. He could see me from all the way back there, you little fuck. Yeah. Like, you could see all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That ever since I got into comedy, the stall tactic, I saw right through it. And I never stalled again. I go to a jiu-jitsu school. I like it. Where's the card? Let's sign up today. Well, let me go home and discuss with my wife and see what plans we can
No, this is no one-foot in, one-foot out business.
Yeah, you just shot yourself.
Yeah. And the people that start, I got a buddy that's 6 months in. He's like, when's it going to get better? When am I going to start getting on? When do I become a regular? When's the bombing going to stop? I'm like, that's up to you, man. And that's also, you know, up to just the fucking comedy gods and like there's so much that's out of your control. Control what you can control, you know?
How funny is that question? When does the bombing start?
Yeah, I know, dude.
It's like a woman who gets beat up every night by her husband. And she's like, when does this end? And we come home and just smack you again. That's exactly what comedy is the first 2 years.
It is,
you're
man.
A domestic wife. You just get domestically abused.
My
and there's
God.
No cop to call. The only cop you call is Joe Manente or fucking the guy who runs the club. There's nobody to call.
Yeah.
It's such a... And I do it again. I'm willing to do it again. You?
Yeah. 1,000%.
Would you start all over again?
I know nothing different, man.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Like, I would do it again just to
it's
put
in
up
your blood,
shit,
dude. I know.
Just to get yelled at.
Yeah.
Like, I remember going to New York.
Because I love that part of it. And you have to. That's why we're here.
That's
you
why
have
we're
Because you love that part. Because you knew that this was going to, you knew it was building to this, you know?
I still remember going to comic strip and wanting to get spots in New York. And then, like, Lucius, you had to sell tickets door to door. And you know me, dog. I'm a great salesman.
I can sell
anything. And I still remember selling and, like, doing, whew. Like, I just sold the last pass. I got an envelope with $400. And I remember being like on 78th Street, walking to the comic strip and going, $400? Why would I give it to this fucking guy for a spot? I could do a spot anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm keeping this $400. Fuck him with his tickets. And I went to Harlem, and then I come back. Where's your tickets? I dropped them here last week. Okay, you could do it. And I still remember getting like two spots.
No way.
From selling tickets, and there'd be like 8 of 9 people in there. And me just dying. Like you were walking off the stage knowing you just ate a bag of horse shit. And there's nothing you could do. Like there's nothing you could do.
Just remember how that tasted so you can wash it out next time.
Never have it back in your mouth again.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the thing.
That's what it is.
Where can they find your website at?
Man, AdamRayComedy.com is where all my tour dates are.
And, you're traveling a lot, brother?
Right now, yeah. I got Omaha Funny Bone coming up and Tempe Improv and DC Improv for New Year's.
Great club.
Yeah, first time headlining there. Clubs. Yeah. And
DC's phenomenal.
I love it. I went there with Bobby Lee. It was my first when I was featured
Perfect
for him.
Club.
Yeah, it's, I mean, underground. Feel like you shouldn't be there. Packed,
yeah,
intimate.
It's fucking great.
Acoustics are killer.
And Tempe's great. You're doing Tempe.
Tempe Improv and Copper Blues Live. That's December 5th through the 8th. And then 2020, man, it's, you know, Helium in Portland and Hyenas and Baltimore. It's all AdamRayComedy.com. About Last Night, the podcast with Brad. Hopefully we can get you on before Brad leaves to become a dad. My special, Read the Room, it's out. And I got a comedy music album coming out December 13th. Got a cartoon with Seth Green coming out on Hulu called Crossing Swords. And then hopefully more shit.
Adam Ray, I love you.
I love you too, man.
Thank you.
So good to see you.
For doing that night because... I was getting every time I.
Thanks get for little, fucking you know checking me.
Every time I get down there, it's always the most obscure guy that comes through for me and lets me know I'm not fucking crazy. And that night, you let me know I was because there's a like I said there's a dude who won't follow me, and when I see him, he'll always come up to me like he tries to be cute and go, "Are you going to use structure this evening?" And I'll go, "You know, man, I'm not sure." I go, "I'm thinking about it, but I really want you to tutor me." So on top of everything that he won't want to follow me, I break his balls.
Oh, my God.
But I don't break his balls in a disrespectful way.
Yeah.
I tell him, "You should teach me how to do comedy. That's what I'm missing. If I had your writing skills, there would be no stopping me." But he refuses to follow me. So,
God.
Like tonight, he will not be down there. He's never down there on a Tuesday night. And there's times, like, I don't call him for a Thursday. And I see he's down there for a Thursday, and I'll call Adam. You know, let me get down there right in front of him. And Adam will go, "I can't. He's already said it to me that he doesn't
God
really
damn, man.
You know what, man?
What do you do, man? It is what it is, yeah.
I got one date left. I'm in Miami for Thanksgiving, but everything's sold out. All I got for
Good
you
for
motherfuckers.
You. The new one,
the
right?
The second show. What's that?
The new Miami Improv? I've been there. It's amazing.
Doral, yeah. I'm excited.
Oh, good.
The only tickets that are available right now are Town Hall. Second show, December 6th, December 7th, sold out at the Chevalier Theater in Boston, Chevalier Theater. So all I have for you guys is the second show, December 6th, 10:30, Town Hall, which is going to be fucking off the chain anyway. I love that fucking place. I'm excited to be doing it. Before we get out of here, a word from our sponsor. Number one, listen, it's over. Fucking football season is halfway there. The NBA is here. College basketball's around the corner. The playoffs are here, and you're still dilly-dallying. Listen, nothing in life is worth it without risk. These days, even going to the fucking grocery store, you get shot in the fucking head. So listen, during Thanksgiving week, my bookie is offering a risk-free bet for the Bears-Lion game. Choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, you get some cash for the holidays. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. My bookie will give you all your money back. This is what gravy's all about on Thanksgiving. So when you're sitting around after dinner hearing that the same old story from your Aunt Irene, why not make it interesting? Fucking put a bet in. Quit fucking waiting around. Sign up today and get into this fucking game. Like I said, you really can't lose. And you got the bowl games coming up. And the best part of it, if you join before Thanksgiving, you'll still have one last shot to take the advantage of their incredible sign-up offer, which is log into mybookie.ag, make your first deposit with promo code CHURCH,
and my bookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your motherfucking bankroll. And that's on top of the risk-free bet, the Lions against fucking the Bears. So, you know, who the fuck do you think you're dealing with, Joey Bananas? Let me repeat this. It's a guaranteed deposit match and risk-free bet for only Thanksgiving only. So if you're a true football fan, whatever the fuck, you don't want to let this opportunity pass you by. Listen, stop waiting on the sidelines. Jump on the gravy train and get on the action with mybookie.ag. Again, grab a pen. That's mybookie.ag. Use promo code CHURCH. Listen, mybookie, you play, you win, you get motherfucking paid. The church is also brought to you by Hymns. Listen, it's getting to the time of the year where you don't want to walk around with dead dick, do you? You know, how much more can your hair go back? How much more hair can you lose without you doing anything? That's why 4hymns.com is here. A one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. I'm 56. I knocked my wife up at 50. But 40% of men by the age of 40 struggle from not being able to get and maintain an erection. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they could turn instead to medicine and science? Expensive pills, injections, where no man wants a fucking injection. Share any experience if you have with doctors in dealing with ED issues. Fuck all that. Check out Hims, the gift that keeps on giving. Listen, well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you combat ED. Hims connects you with real licensed doctors and FDA-approved pharmaceutical products to treat ED. Prescription solutions backed by science and made more affordable by 4hymns.com. So see the results where other treatments fall short. Stop worrying about multiple in-office doctor visits. No painful injections or other treatments like that. This is easy. You answer a couple questions about your medical history. You chat with a doctor on a confidential review. If you're approved by the doctor, the products are shipped directly to your door. Listen. You can't make it any easier than this. That's why Uncle Joey's here. Being your best means performing at your best. Erectile dysfunction, who needs that? You're going to walk around like the ugly chick at the fucking prom, knowing that your cock don't work. You don't need that. With these Black Friday deals, they're not going to last long, but you can. Do me a favor. Feast your eyes on this. Grab a pen. Start out by going to 4hymns.com/church and get a free online visit. Free. Who takes care of you like that? Nobody, your Uncle Joey. Prescription products are subject to doctor approval and require an online consultation with a physician who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost you hundreds if you went in person to the doctor's office or pharmacy. Remember that, 4hymns.com/church. I also want to thank Policy Genius. Listen, when going for insurance, go to PolicyGenius.com. It's that easy and get the best quote. I want to thank Policy Genius. I want to thank Hims. And I want to thank MyBookie.ag. Most importantly, I want to thank you fucking savages for listening to the podcast. We'll be ready to rock. And don't forget AdamRay.com.
Hey, AdamRayComedy.com.
At AdamRayComedy.com.
Yeah.
Don't forget JoeyDiaz.net. The hoodies are coming. Don't forget tickets for December 6th. At Town Hall, and that's it, and that's that. Have a great fucking week. I'll see you here Monday morning, tip top Magoo, ready to motherfucking go. Kick this Muley.
Beautiful.